what we're doing today is some first initiations and some second initiations. First initiation means that you're formally receiving the Holy Name. Of course, the Holy Name does not wait for initiation. As soon as your tongue touches the Holy Name, Hare Krishna, there's a response. And if you're extraordinarily fortunate and happen to chant without any offense, extraordinary things can happen, even the first time your tongue touches the Holy Name. Because not everybody can chant with that purity the first time they vibrate Hare Krishna. We have purificatory rituals and purificatory processes to make it easier for you to chant Hare Krishna with a clean heart. Those who are taking first initiation, they are making a clean break from their past record of sinful activity. We have to understand how sinful activity destroys our life, both materially and spiritually. With your intelligence, you should try to understand how illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication ruin all your good qualities, destroy your heritage as a human being. We were speaking yesterday in Christchurch about how sometimes when people take to Krishna consciousness, your friends and relatives kind of either tease you or can even deride you. Hey, you've left the real world. You're not dealing with the real world anymore. It's quite amazing how many people have agreed that such a low standard of life is the real world. And you can't allow yourself to be trapped into accepting their standard. We were discussing, I believe it was Friday night in Christchurch, about how some people have a pursuit or hobby or activity. In some countries, it's called dumpster diving, but I'm told here you have another name for these big canisters outside big food stores and shops where they put all their rubbish in. They're called skips here. Yeah, in other places, they're called dumpsters. So, some people like to just climb on top of these dumpsters, pull back the top and dive in and look for valuable things. The popular conception is that these people may be very hungry, and that's how they get their food, but it's not true. They get off, they just get a rush from, you know, the whole activity of, you know, wow, look at this skip, you know, let's get inside and see what's there. Could be something valuable. And the whole activity of, you know, jumping in and, you know, searching and finding, wow, look at this, this might have some value. So in some countries that's called dumpster diving. It's like a whole sport, you know, bungee jumping or tramping or ice skating or stamp collecting. There's also dumpster diving. They do that in Germany?
Not that accurate.
So that's a good example of what people have christened or anointed as the real world. They take such low activities, such low aspirations, such rummaging and scavenging and scraping the bottom of the barrel, and they say, this is the real world. Now why are you leaving it? Sometimes when I give these examples, many think, oh, who would ever do such a thing, you know, dumpster diving, whatever you call it here, skip searching. But while I was giving the example, I asked, okay, I'm sure there must be someone in this room who's done it. And sure enough, one devotee raises, yeah, I did it. It was Ram Dass. I said, well, can you explain to the folks in TV land what was the thrill? Because you didn't need to do it to eat. You know, you weren't poor. I mean, like, you couldn't live. So why did you do it? He said, oh, it was just the thrill, you know? You go to a skip behind a New World food store or whatever, you know, a big clothing shop. You go there at 12 midnight, you know, you sneak there, and you got a friend posted as lookout, you know, a lookout guard, and then you dive in and you see what you can find, you know, because sometimes stores, they throw out valuable things, you know, and who knows, you know, what you might find. So I said, well, did you ever find anything valuable? No. But it was just the whole activity, you know. 12 midnight, it's dark, you're on someone else's property, and there could be valuable things there. And you're with your friends, and it's a whole emotional dynamic, a whole rasa. So, it's a good example of how we scrounge and scavenge for the lowest kind of pleasures in the material world, and then we glorify it as the real world. And when someone tries to give up those activities, we become angry. What are you doing? You're leaving the real world. You should think clearly and deeply about what people call the real world. Basically, it means during the day, they are engaged in activities of economic gain and spending whatever they gain. Shukadeva Goswami describes this lifestyle in the beginning of the second canto of Bhagavatam. During the day, where is money? Where is money? And how to spend the money? That's daytime. And then nighttime? Television, intoxication, and sex. That's the nighttime activity. And then you go to sleep and forget about it all for a few hours, only to rise in the morning and begin the same cycle again. This is the real world. This is very dehumanizing. This is very low, low class. This is not the standard of actual civilized life. I think last time you were here, we discussed, you have this word used in Australia and New Zealand, lowrider. So this is the lowrider standard. Just spend your days earning money and spending it, and your nighttime watching television, some intoxication, some sex, and then you go to sleep. Day after day after day after day, day after day after day. Can you see your life like that? That's what will become of you. Society has nothing else to offer you. Now, there are 365 days in a year. Just imagine 1 year like this. During the day, working, or trying to pacify the dole office. And then looking for bargains, looking for how to spend the money. And at nighttime, television. To try to get a digital TV or something. Television, intoxication, alcohol, marijuana, whatever. Same old sex, and then go to sleep. 365 days a year. Just imagine 1 year of that. Then multiply 1 year times 10 or 20 or 30. That's the real world. There's really nothing more going on than that. Sometimes people read a few mundane books, or they go to some art show or something. That's not the real essence of their life. Those things are just like little seasoning on the main course of eating, sleeping, sex, and trying to protect yourself. I hope that no one here is so foolish to take that so-called real world as the standard. Why can't the real world be composed of the highest spiritual aspirations and the highest quality of behavior? Why can't that be the real world? Why can't the real world consist of aspirations for pleasure that has no beginning and end? True understanding of yourself as different from matter. Dedication to the pleasure of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. Why can't that be the real world? But please don't allow yourself to be bamboozled and railroaded into accepting such a low, savage life as the real world. To be Krishna conscious, you have to be a bit individually strong of character. To not be swept away by so much social pressure, family pressure. Everyone's pushing you, come on, do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. Even the so-called alternative people basically just engage in material sense gratification in an alternative way. Are there really alternative forms of intoxication, illicit sex? The same old, same old, whether you're a mainstream person or an alternative person. So there's so much pressure that's pushing you to just live an ignorant life. Be satisfied with that. So your days, whether you're working or a student at the university or polytech, or you're struggling with the dole office, what are your days and nights filled with? Just the grunts and groans and squeals and grits of, you know, earning money and spending money and trying to satisfy your senses. That's all. Very low animal type of life. That's all society can offer you. Work, buy, consume, and die. This is the real world. Year after year of this. And then people wonder why families can't stay together, why relationships can't stay together. Just imagine 1 year of such a lifestyle. You're with one person for 1 year and 365 days of this work, buy, consume, die lifestyle. During the day, you earn and spend money. At night, television, intoxication, sex. You go to sleep day after day after day after day. Such a deadening, dehumanizing experience. Yet people want everyone to share in this experience, and they don't like it when persons try to rise to a higher level. I wonder how many of you are heroic enough to resist all this pressure. Or how easily can you be bought off? Do you really think a little bit of romance is going to do it for you all your life? Are you just surrendering to that because there's nothing better to do and everybody else is doing it and you're tired of being lonely? We're also discussing this Friday night in Christchurch at our little discussion session. With guests and others. What is the craving for another person really about? The craving for another person is like you just want a warm body somewhere near you that interacts with you. You don't want to feel like there's no one around you can interact with. So you have to have somebody, you know, who can just, you know, give off some vibes. And so you can interact with those vibes. And then you feel like, yeah, I'm an okay person. You want some mental vibes to shoot at you, some physical vibes. You want someone's thoughts to play with, someone's body to play with, and then you feel, oh, my world is full, my world is complete, everything is poor now. Mm. why must we do these things without thinking deeply about how we are minimizing the potential of human life and making our life so narrow and one-dimensional? How many of you really think you can be satisfied with this kind of life for long? We have to train ourselves, purify ourselves, to rise above. Such dumpster diving satisfaction. We get bought off so easily. Oh, I got a little bit of romance now. Everything is all right. I've got a new job now. Everything is okay. I've moved to a new house. Everything is fine. I've just taken a course. Life is better. How easily we allow ourselves to get bought off. Yeah, having a few good weekends, you know. It's been some nice intoxication. Yeah, life's not so bad. Having a bit of sex life here, a bit of sex life there. Yeah, everything's feeling kind of perfect and complete. You know it's not perfect and complete, but you allow yourself to accept such a low standard of life because you figure there's nothing else better to do. Even if you wonder, is there something else? You, meanwhile, carry on with the lower lifestyle because you figure, well, until I find that something else, I'm not going to give up this low stuff I had, even though it's so boring and deadening. I mean, something. What we're trying to do in our teaching of Krishna consciousness is to elevate people's aspirations, to elevate their expectations, to make it so they cannot be satisfied any longer by the matrix of illusion. Matrix preaching will be it'll be big again because in a couple of weeks Matrix 2 is coming out. And then in November Matrix 3 is coming out. You can start telling everyone again about the matrix illusion. We're trying to inspire people to get out of the matrix of illusion, and we also teach them what is there when you get out. Otherwise, you'll never be motivated to get out unless you know what's better available. We're trying to save the people of New Zealand from destroying their fine intelligence in such abysmal habits. Whether you're living in the city or living in the Wairarapa, just imagine yourself entombed in some house or flat with your television set. Yeah. On the table are your bills. You call them bills? Yeah, your bills, you know. Then you've got a few bottles of wine or liquor, whiskey, and you've got a few other intoxicants around. And there's your partner, you know. You kind of, just mauled each other night after night for a couple of years. All the freshness is gone, if there ever was any in that. Yeah. And what is there to do? You go to sleep at night, you get up in the morning, you go to work. Go to school. That's it. Then you call up some friends. You talk about this, you talk about that. That's going to be the ultimate of your life. Finally, you think of, hey, it's getting pretty boring. And sooner or later, the woman says, yeah, I know, why don't we just have some kids? What the heck, you know? Yeah, make life a bit interesting. We'll have some kids. Yeah, yeah. And what if the guy says, well, I don't know. Yeah, but of course, she pressures him. Come on, come on, come on. Yeah, well, I mean, if you have no money. And often, many people tell me, often, the lady just pressures. Look, if this relationship's going to last, you got to have some kids. Many men have told me that because their wife bugged them, before they had some kids, you know. Otherwise, they were just happy to hang out with their mates, you know, during the day and evening, come home at night, maul the wife, go to sleep, and, you know. But because the wife was bugging them, come on, let me, our family needs something more. Yeah. Of course, neither the man or the woman have any idea who they are or how to explain to any of their would-be dependents what is the purpose of life. But it's just like, yeah, well, might as well do something. Yeah, why not? You know, have a little kid or two. Yeah. What the heck? And the guy finally surrenders. I don't give in to her. I mean, you know, gosh. My life is just going to be full of anxiety, you know. And he goes and consults with his mates. What do you think? You know, my old lady's really pushing me, you know. To have a kid, you know. Hey, man. Hey, mate, you know. It's just one of those things, you know. You just knock one off and, you know, maybe she'll calm down, you know. And people, they tell me this is how it works. And in this way, the problems simply increase. Then what usually happens is the ladies, they like their kids better than their husband. Female secret, they don't broadcast it, but yeah. Once they get the kid, they like the kid better than the husband. The whole thing is a bodily conception of life. I am his body, so the kid comes from her body, so that's like more intense bodily conception, more intense illusions. And sometimes the man starts thinking, hey, I'm not the baby of the family anymore. I'm not getting any more attention. In fact, what's becoming increasingly common these days is once the woman gets the kid, she just, you know, dumps the guy. All right, you know, hey, you've done your job. I got my kid or two, you know, hit the road. Of course, the classic example was set by what is now considered the most successful, you know, female musician of the past 100 years. You know, she decided, I want a kid, but I don't want to marry. So she put out an ad. You know, anyone want to father my child? Send your application in. Yeah. Madonna. Yeah. Put out an advert. Who wants to father a child? But, you know, I don't want you sticking around afterwards. So, this is the real world. How can men or women submit to such a dehumanizing experience? And just look at your life and see how easily you're bought off. You got a little bit of romance in your life. You're taking a little course here or there. You got a little job and you think, oh, it's not so bad. Everything's okay. What we're trying to do is train persons to go to a higher level. And we're offering them a purificatory process. That's what this is all about. An opportunity for purification and a chance to attract the attention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Why is it that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has not been very important to you before? Because your lifestyle prevented any sensitivity towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You lived in darkness and then you're wondering, well, where's the light? You've got to come out of the cave. So this ceremony represents a formal exit from the cave into the light. And the means of escape from the artificial world of low animal-like aspirations is the Hare Krishna mantra. And the Hare Krishna mantra is also the means for entering into the spiritual realm. So it's doing both things. It's cleansing, and it is reestablishing, reviving your relationship with Krishna. First initiation is a chance. It doesn't mean you've graduated. It means you're formally enrolled. It doesn't mean you couldn't have made any spiritual progress before initiation. No, that's not so. Srila Prabhupada, founder of Krishna consciousness, Western world, waited 13 years for his yajna. He was so powerful in his bhakti that he From the very first time he met his spiritual master, he took the words of his guru deep into his heart. So the relationship was actually begun then. Not everybody has that kind of power. So therefore, they need rituals to purify them and gradually bring them along. Those who are taking initiation, please remember that these are promises for now and evermore. Mm-hmm. Not that, well, I was feeling a bit burned out with illicit sex intoxication. Yeah, I figured I'll spend a couple of years, you know, away from it. And then, yeah, maybe if I get back into it, it won't be so bad. Or, yeah, I took some vows, but I was feeling some pressure. My senses were agitating. So what the heck? When I made the vows, I really meant it. But now circumstances have changed. We don't want any of this kind of dog honor. Vedic honor in Vedic culture means if you make a promise, even if it turns out to be uncomfortable for you in the future, you still keep your promise because you made it. There's a lot to be said for honor and integrity. And that is what's missing in society today because of people's degraded habits in which they scrounge, they dumpster dive or skip search or any little, you know, disgusting bit of sense gratification. They have no honor or integrity anymore. Some of you can just think about it. What you would do just to have a good time for your senses. Or what wouldn't you do? That's how society has trained you. And many people are afraid to be alone these days. Therefore, they want to just be with some warm body at all costs. They'll be, you know, it's not everything I expected, but it's something. I don't want to be alone. People are terrified by their own selves these days. They're terrified. I don't want to live with myself and deal with myself. So not only do they accumulate possession after possession, even if you're a guy or girl with not much money, you know, you have your CD collection or something, you got to collect something. So they accumulate possessions and you accumulate relationships one after another. All this is meant to keep you from thinking about yourself too deeply. We want to give that facility for people to indeed cope with themselves, deal with themselves, think about themselves. Thinking about yourself means thinking about Krishna, because there's no way that you exist without Krishna. You're all Krishna's parts and parcels. We hope that more of you will want to embark officially on the path of Krishna consciousness. The vows aren't really that difficult when you've got some higher pleasure in your life. And just think of what they're promising not to do. Intoxication. Is there really pleasure in intoxication? Doping yourself up, doling yourself up. I remember Carlos was telling me how he was flatting with some mates and he woke up one morning at 7 a.m. to go to the bathroom and he couldn't get to his own bathroom because in his living room the floor was just covered with the bodies of his friends, you know, just crashed out after a whole night of, you know, getting stoned. He couldn't even get he couldn't get through to get to his own bathroom. He had to go outside. Those three people. They're just bodies, you know, strewn all over the floor in a random way, you know, male and female, just totally out of it, you know, basically unconscious, you know, after a night of pleasure. And then, because people's so-called pleasure is so low these days, because they're scraping at the bottom of the skip for, you know, for any little thing they find, and that means they're becoming so barbaric. They just abuse each other. It's becoming so common in New Zealand. If you talk to people and ask them what's really going on in their life, you'll be shocked. I was talking, there's one young lady in Christchurch who started taking up Krishna consciousness. When her mother was pregnant with her, her father threw the mother down the stairs because the mother wouldn't have an abortion. Then, when she was born, and the father by that time, of course, was already with someone else, and he just told the mother, you know, look, I've got someone else. I don't want someone else to find out that I, you know, have this daughter from you. So why don't we just adopt this kid out? So the kid was adopted out with the consent of the mother and the father, adopted out to the mother's next boyfriend. And his path, his hobby was beating the mother and the daughter. So anyway, after a while, he was gone, and then the mother had someone else. You can imagine the effect on this child growing up. But these things are becoming all too common. It's not that difficult to stay away from these abominable activities, illicit sex. If you actually knew what unrestricted sex life does to your health, you'd think twice about it. It seems all so easy. You know, you just grab someone and exchange some fluids, and that's it. No, it's much more than that. You're expending physical substances, you're burning resources, physical resources. You're literally burning yourself out. But you don't see it now. These things are known, of course, in Ayurveda, the traditional medical knowledge of India. It's also known in Chinese medicine. And naturally, Western medicine doesn't really want to pursue such subjects. They say, just, if you're 70, just take your Viagra and keep pecking away. Last time I was passing through Palmerston North, I picked up a regular newspaper for Palmerston North, and on the front page there was an article, some new citizens advisory board had formed for helping persons above the age of 70 to have conjugal affairs. This was hailed as a great step forward for the city of Palmerston North, caring for people, reaching out. But, it was a big article. So you may think, oh, how could this be true? That's why I'm documenting all these things. Do you understand? This is what's going on? So the article was saying that don't think just because you're 70 that you're finished. No. you can still get it on, Just come to our, come to our government-funded counseling, center, and we'll give you tips how your life can still be productive, in your 70s and 80s. Don't think it's too late. Don't think, don't think these things are now all impossible for you. So the whole thing was presented like, this is really helping people. This is real sensitivity. This is real compassion. This is the real world. that's your real world? Is that what you want for your life? The only thing you have to look forward to when you're 70 or 80 is, can I still engage in these activities? Well, think about it. Don't be mindless. Don't be carried away just by your youth or your young adulthood. Don't let these bodily phases carry you away in such a way that you don't think about what is the purpose of your life's journey. So just like this train is making some noise, then it will pass. So may your life, you make some noise and you pass.
Excuse me.
We're wanting to establish a real civilization, and that has to begin with populating society with self-sufficient, intelligent persons who know how to remain purified and who know what is the ultimate goal of life and how to teach others what is the ultimate goal of life. Second initiation means that you should be established in understanding what's the goal of life, and you should be able to teach others the same thing. Second initiation means six activities. You study the Vedic knowledge and teach others the Vedic knowledge. You worship the deity, teach others how to worship the deity. You give and receive charity. At least some of those activities you should do. You should either be worshiping the deity, or you should be teaching. One of those activities has to be prominent in your life. Then you're an actual brahmana. A brahmana means one who can control the mind and senses, knows how to live a purified, tolerant life. Tolerant means you don't tolerate sinful activity, but you tolerate the disturbances of material life. You have both wisdom and applied or realized knowledge. You know how to live an honest religious life. You know how to live simply. We're trying to populate the world with these kind of persons. I hope that some of you in the audience will think deeply about your life. And not just waste your energies, your valuable lifetime, doing what everybody else is already doing. I mean, probably everybody in this room, you've already done what is to be considered the pinnacle activities of human affairs. You've already done that. You're just in your 20s or 30s. You've had intoxication. You've had illicit sex. What more are you going to look forward to? Don't be so bored that you settle for such low-grade activities to try and get relief by doing them. It's dangerous when people get that bored and that frustrated that they become so content with a low level of life. So we're making agitation, we're making propaganda, we're shaking the rug. Come on, go higher, go higher. There's something more you can do, go higher. Some people don't like that. Hey, you're taking these people from the real world. One devotee who was initiated yesterday in Christchurch, later in the day, after the ceremony, I heard that his father came into the temple looking for me. What have you done to my son? Hanuman, the temple president, intercepted him, and the father was telling him, I don't care what his name is, he's always going to be my Adam. And so the devotee told him, oh yeah, you can go on calling him whatever you like, Adam, it's all right. The father was fuming, why doesn't he finish the university? His son had 1 year more to go in university. He had stopped going to university about a year ago. So we told him, you don't mind if your son finishes university? Yeah, he's only got 1 year to go. What's the big deal? But why don't you appreciate that he had already stopped going to university when he came to us and his life was a wreck and we straightened him out? Why don't you give some thanks? He was a wreck materially and spiritually. He was going nowhere fast under the guise of going to university. And so we turned him around, taught him how to materially and spiritually take care of himself. And now he's got a new lease on life, and here you are complaining. He can't even be thankful. If he had gone on the way that you wanted him to, he had been finished. He was getting into intoxication, deep. He was just becoming more and more degraded and mindless. And we stopped all that. He wants to finish his university 1 year. What's 1 year? That's what he wants to do. It's no problem. But at least you should have some gratitude that he was going nowhere based on the input that you were giving him. You just left him to be mauled apart by the university life. Generally, for most persons, university life means you pile up big debts while you're partying on the weekends. And then you look for somebody to shack up with, you know, have a relationship with, that's university life. And then you graduate and you think, well, how to pay back the debts? Your minimum $15,000 in debt. And your high is what, $25,000 for that university?
$100,000.
Huh?
$100,000.
$100,000 for university?
Really?
Really? How is that possible? $100,000.
Some 4, 5, 6 year courses.
We're trying to offer people an alternative. We're not saying, drop your jobs, don't go to school. What we are saying, learn how to be a civilized human being. Learn how to have a purified life. Try to understand what is Krishna. It's fun to understand what is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because Krishna is the source of all pleasure. We're so crazy, we think that because we're certified dumpster divers, that we know all about pleasure. And we have all these visualizations about how we're doing real pleasurable activities. Just like Ram Dass was describing, it's 12 midnight, it's real exciting, it's dark, and you're behind this store, and it's on someone else's property, and you have to post a lookout guard, and then you get in there and you rummage about, you never know what you're going to find. We visualize these things as pleasure, and therefore we don't want to listen to Krishna, who is the source of unlimited pleasure. Those who are actually pleasure lovers should seriously try to understand Krishna, because Krishna is the unlimited pleasure enjoyer.
All right.